Nowhere in Ireland are people banned from marching in the St. Patrick's Day Parade. But here in South Boston, we are proud to stand with the outlaws, with the banned, with the forbidden. And we're going to march through the streets of South Boston, and we're going to talk with the tens of thousands of working people that came out today and say, which side are you on?
For me, I plan on staying around Boston for at least the next couple of weeks. I haven't been around recently. I just went on a road trip backpacking down to Florida and needed to kind of get myself in check and clear my own head. But now it's full on activism down here. We took off and everybody was really, really excited to be out in the streets again. It's something that we haven't gotten to do as much lately with the breaking up of camp. There hasn't been much of a presence in the streets, but now we're getting back out there in full force. We're reminding people that we're here and we're not going anywhere.
Occupy Boston, hours away from a possible confrontation with police. Many protesters packing up their tents and gear, but others apparently determined to hang on to their camp at Dewey Square.
You are trespassing on Greenway property. If you don't leave the park, you will be subject to arrest.
I'm from Occupy Boston, originally from New Hampshire, and I spent about 3 months at Dewey Square when the encampment was up. Was there day in, day out. I helped with safety, keeping the camp under control. Overall, my involvement has been just getting people aware.
I was like, oh, cool, Broadway. Then like, yeah.
I've got $160,000 in student debt over my head because I made the decision to go to UVM. You know, I was up there studying biochemistry. This was my senior year, so I would be graduating in May with the class of 2012. But I took the money that I got from my student refund out of the bank. I left to pursue all these other projects because nobody else is doing them. Nobody else wants to stand up and say this is how it needs to be done.
One of the significant things about Occupy is, although the public stereotypical image of Occupy is of very young people, there's an extraordinary depth of intergenerational organizing that goes on within Occupy or under the rubric of Occupy. And that can include several generations of not just activists, but also advocates of all sorts of social causes. And certainly military veterans have played some role in that. Well, in Boston in particular, I think the military veterans played an important role. They perceived that they could play literally a frontline role in resisting, and thereby generated this very, appalling and sordid, but at the same time instructive image or spectacle for the public.
We're here today because the Veterans for Peace weren't allowed to march in the official march. They're not allowed to wave their white dove flags. So what we do is we have an alternative march at the end, basically to show the organizers of this parade that they're not going to keep anybody out based on their viewpoints, based on their values, based on anything. You know, there's no reason to exclude a group from something like this.
You know, we're basically here to support the people who aren't allowed to march in the regular parade, because that's who we are too.
Yeah.
You know, everyone is part of the 99%. I don't really understand why they are so afraid of people who stand for peace.
Yeah.
That doesn't really, you know, I don't get that.
The reason why they have to organize a second peace parade for St. Patrick's Day is because the officials who organized the main parade have banned the participation by members of Veterans for Peace and the LGBT community, and have really discriminated against who can be in their parade and who can't. So Veterans for Peace members said, we don't have to put up with that. You don't want us to be in your parade? We'll make our own, and we'll call it a peace parade, and everybody is welcome to be in it.
Excuse me. Do you have an idea, gauge on about how long it's going to be before we can funnel in and start marching?
It's supposed to be starting in the next 15 minutes or so.
Next 15 minutes or so? All right.
I think an important element that gets missed in portraying the Occupy movement, not only by the mainstream media, but also by independent and social media, is the human element of the Occupy movement. Many times it's overly politicized, and this gives the impression that Occupy movement is a purely political or economic movement, or a movement that tries to rectify political and economic injustices.
We begin this morning with breaking news, and that a crackdown against Occupy Wall Street protesters.
They gave a fair amount of coverage in the early days, but lately it has dropped away. And I think it's dropped away because of the lack of focus. I think the media needs names, it needs spokesmen, it needs coherence. So yes, they're not getting the attention they probably want, but it's also on their part that they don't have the structure that lends itself to media attention.
There's definitely a culture clash going on here, and I think a lot of people in the media, especially on the right, but really on both sides too, are trying to fit this movement within certain lenses.
It's as simple as saying to them, go get a job right after you take a bath.
Right now we have a system that really feeds a minority with everything that they need to succeed, but it leaves behind such a large group of people, so many minds with so much to contribute to society. I mean, some of the most disenfranchised people have so much to offer, and they have no way to do that.
Can I get you guys down here?
So we're being told that it's about time to start moving here. We've been waiting since about 1:30, standing around, and we keep being told that it'll just, yeah. We keep being told, you know, another 10 minutes, but it sounds like this time that they're about to make room for us to start moving. Mic check! It's time to start moving! It's time to start yelling!
It's time to start yelling!
It's time to let people know why we're here!
It's time to let people know why we're here!
And get them to join us!
And get them to join us!
Get down! The revolution is in this town! Get up! Get down! The revolution is in this town! Myself, I would like to raise the standard of living for everybody all across the world. That's what I want to come out of this. I want to take things that we do inefficiently. I think capitalism got us to a certain point, and then it kind of shot us in the foot, because all we do is produce now without any question as to where it's going to go, when it's going to get there, or how much consumption of resources is worth that much production. Boston's a really important city as far as the whole global revolution is concerned, because It was the hotbed for the first American Revolution. There's still a lot of that sentiment here. There's still a lot of people who feel the same way that we did 250 years ago. You know, nothing's really changed. We were explicitly owned by the crown at that point. Now we're implicitly owned by them through the banking system. Regardless of the status quo, regardless of capitalism, socialism, racism, sexism, they're here for peace. And peace is going to involve a shift in our mentality in all of those things.
This is The Fight Back, thefightback.org. Reporting from the streets of D.C., I'm Pete Tucker. Today we look at Occupy D.C. and what it's up to since its forceful eviction from McPherson Square in February.
So Mike and I are headed to our coffee shop that we always go to work on an article.
Yeah, I feel like that's like the trend.
So we're writing this article about Occupy Our Homes, and I guess we're still trying to figure out what.
We were told that it hasn't been theorized yet. Like, nobody's really, like, put theory to, like, you know, taking over these homes or, like, saving these people's houses. Like, what does this mean for, like, the bigger picture? Not just the movement, but, like, I don't know. How does that relate to capital? And we got a lot of feedback from people about how we could make it a lot better. But we'll probably end up with two articles, one sort of a how-to for activists and another kind of, like, theoretical piece, kind of working out, you know, those bigger questions in our heads. Hopefully in a way that's helpful to other people too.
My name is Rujal Azir. I'm 24 years old. I grew up in the area. I'm from Potomac, Maryland. And I've been living in D.C. all my life, kind of like the burbs of D.C., but D.C. has always been home.
Well, Occupy D.C. has been very significant. The focus in K Street and the focus on the lobbying, the focus on the influence of especially the money of the financial sector on elected officials in Washington is very, very important. And so, you know, while Occupy Wall Street has been focusing on Wall Street, it's been very important to have Occupy DC focus on the link, the bridge between Wall Street and Capitol Hill.
Intersection! Do not move! Take this intersection! Do not move! Occupy this intersection!
Occupy DC began October 1st, I believe it was, with just a few people. And they would sleep out in McPherson Square, and they would be shooed away by the police at night, forced to sleep on the sidewalk. And then pretty soon the numbers swelled, and they were able to establish that they weren't going to be pushed away. And to see young people taking control and you know, just taking initiative from, you know, marches to setting up a feeding system to a whole number of things, it was exciting, and it remains so, although it's been forcefully evicted from McPherson Square. People are doing exciting work now with organizations, and it's hard to keep up with everybody now because it's not a central location, but there's some very interesting stuff happening.
This was a truly a thousand flowers bloom type of movement. Their success and their failure are really two sides of the same thing. Their success is that you can kind of choose the theme that you think is most deserving of attention. So it started off with Wall Street, but then it moved to other things. Down here to Washington, of course, everybody could bring in their own cause. So that led to a lot of people willing to join the movement and willing to put up tents in various places and protest. But at the other hand, that means there's no coherence in terms of a single message.
Well, I think Occupy had a divided face, and still does. I mean, at the core, there is the goal of creating a perfect kind of micro-community. There's also, however, a whole periphery around the core. And the periphery around the core are 100-plus working groups that are focused on any number of different issues. And their goal really is to take a lot of the Occupy energy and push it into every corner of civil society.
So ever since the eviction, we realized that the visibility is really important role of Occupy as well. This is called the People's Library. It's very well organized. It's based on subjects. And we have Arabic books, Spanish books, and then, of course, English books. This is where the kitchen used to be, and this is how we also had an amazing amount of support. We had a lot of local restaurant vendors come in and either provide food for the day, lunch and dinner. And this is where the folks can come and sit back and eat and enjoy some food so they can continue organizing and working. And you'll always see two people at the info tent. And you'll have a big whiteboard with all the information, whether it's about a teach-in or an action. And we have a big calendar over there with information about daily meetings from different working groups. So people are not sleeping in McPherson Square anymore. They're sleeping in front of Bank of America now, which is even more awesome. But the tents are still here for visibility to show and prove that we're not leaving, we're still here.
I think the Occupy movement has a couple of what I would call legitimate grievances. One is the ultra-high incomes of the very wealthiest individuals in this country. And that objection, I think, gave rise to the so-called Buffett rule. Now, we all realize that the Buffett rule, if actually put in place, is not going to deal with the U.S. deficit, but it does get at the very richest, or that's the idea.
Occupy Wall Street has had an achievement. It's made Americans realize that that's not what they want. The Buffett rule, by even liberal estimates, would raise $4.7 billion a year. We borrow that much daily from the Chinese. What does it resolve? The 1% versus 99%, that argument or that debate was already underway with the start of the Tea Party movement in 2009. Crony capitalism was already on the forefront, on the tip of America's tongues. They didn't advance anything. The Buffett rule's a joke. Even the Democrats said it won't work. What is it? It's part of a narrative. That narrative plays to the more progressive base or the more progressive elements of the Democratic Party. In the time it's taken me to talk, how much money have we borrowed if it's $4.7 billion a day? Several hundred million.
Occupy's goals are not directed towards legislators. They certainly have had an impact, almost immediate impact, on the way in which political elites speak to one another, and certainly in the way in which they speak about their constituents. In other words, it sort of moved what they call the political conversation slightly to the left, but only slightly to the left. But given how far to the right the political conversation has been pushed in the last 30 years, it's a very, very, very small adjustment. And but that's not where the primary energies of Occupy are aimed at, not by any means.
I see this as a movement of many movements, honestly, because now you see a lot of different working groups happening. We have Occupy Our Homes DC, which focuses on evictions. Then you also see the Criminal Injustice, which focuses on the prison industrial complex. You also see the Walmart campaign, which focuses on stopping these big corporations from coming into the city. I've been focused with Occupy Our Homes DC, which focuses on displacement issues in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, stopping evictions in general. And we've been successful thus far. Like, we've stopped two evictions from happening, one in Maryland and one in D.C.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? Are we still on for the meeting today?
I think so. I think we should even talk about, like, the bank action and, like, the other upcoming meetings and, I guess, make an agenda and stuff like that.
Okay, and then are other folks from the other organizations going to be joining the meeting, or is it just going to be Occupy Our Homes?
I think we'd want to have, like, more than just Occupy Our Homes there.
Okay, but we also need to make sure we have the story together so everybody's on the same page. So we need to,
right.
At least, like, that's the first thing that we should do on the agenda, at least.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, what else should be on the agenda?
I guess story, bank action, strategy, and then what, I guess, just roles and responsibilities. So we're headed to get some food for our meeting. We have a meeting with a lady facing homelessness today. And it's been really emotional. We've met with her a couple of times, and now it's going to be a larger meeting with folks that are involved with Occupy Our Homes DC and folks that have been working towards affordable housing in the district. And together we're trying to plan for a direct action to highlight her story and provide secure housing for her and her family. She has 6 children, 2 were taken away, and in order for her to get her kids back, should have to have housing, and they've just completely denied to listen to her story. So we're gonna do what the state has not provided, provide housing.
Good. Oh, thank you. All right, cool. Sorry to take this teleconference.
Yeah, do you mind? And then, should you do the agenda?
Yeah, I made it, it's right
there. Can we print it out?
Yeah, who can print it?
Sure, I don't know. You can ask Lacey or something.
Lacey?
Yeah. So let's just take the stuff and then go to the other conference room.
Okay.
Awesome.
Cool.
Most of the major U.S. cities had certainly hosted occupations. Boston and D.C. were some of the two stronger ones and longer lasting ones. But I think the fact that Washington, D.C. has been a place of dissent because it's the seat of government has been a place of dissent for so long. There's a way of dealing with dissenters and protesters in D.C. that made it easier. Perhaps. And Boston, the history, perhaps the revolutionary history has some bearing on this. But Occupy Boston was, you know, fairly resilient for longer than occupations in other cities.
Here in the United States, they're going to continue under a smaller platform. And they're being used, flat out being used by both those within the Obama campaign that need to create a boogeyman for this class warfare that we see going on. In other words, let's talk about the 1% versus the 99%, when in fact it's the middle class that represents 53% of Americans, and they're the ones that are the drivers of our economic engine. So Occupy Wall Street doesn't speak to anyone. Matter of fact, they're more the 0.1%. If you take tens of thousands of people out of 300 plus million, what are they?
I don't think the Occupy movement is one movement. It's individuals who have crossed that threshold to taking action. But I think you're going to see smaller actions in people's own communities, and that can't be undone.